Hello. Welcome to the Unity Spiritual Center of Albuquerque podcast featuring the Reverend Gordon Kyler or occasionally a guest speaker. You can find us online at uscabq.org or by searching for Unity Spiritual Center Albuquerque on Facebook or YouTube. You can visit us in person at 9800 Candelaria Road Northeast in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And now, Reverend Gordon Kyler.
Thank you. Beautiful song. Love can show the way. And that's really what our core values are all about. Love showing the way. This is the lesson of this series that I've been waiting for because I do love our core values. I mean, think about them. Christ-centered, loving, inclusive, joyous, uplifting, open-minded, and fun. How many churches actually have fun as one of their core values? We're going to talk about that in a few minutes. This has been a three-week series, and 2 weeks ago we explored our mission statement. We inspire spiritual growth through honoring many paths: education, prayer, sacred service, and abundant living. And then last week, we took a deeper dive into our vision statement. Centered in love, we see our harmonious world of divine expression. And this Sunday, we conclude this series by exploring our core values. One of the things we know that is that throughout history, throughout this glorious tapestry that we call humanity, there exists a deep longing for connection, a desire to belong, and a seeking of spiritual fulfillment. Every human being in every condition, whether consciously or unconsciously, has those three things going on within them: a longing for connection, a wanting to belong, and a desire for spiritual fulfillment. And within Unity, we provide a place where this can happen. We provide a place where we can be all of us on a spiritual journey that intertwines the sacred and the communal, that is rooted in Christ-centered values of love, inclusivity, joy, upliftment, open-mindedness, and as I said, many churches don't have fun as part of their core values, and yet, and we think of Jesus as being this very serious person, but he had fun. There are stories about him dancing in villages, and certainly about drinking wine. He knew how to make wine easier than I can. He knew how to have fun. I kind of think some of the things he did, like walking on water and stuff, was kind of for fun. Like, watch this, guys. Let's see how they react. And certainly he had a sense of humor. Although it's hard to pick up on that in the modern Bible, he did have a sense of humor. Like when he called Peter Satan. He said, "Satan, get thee behind me." That was kind of poking fun at Peter. He wasn't actually calling him Satan. It was, in fact, the Jewish people of that time didn't really believe in Satan. But it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing. "Oh, you devil, you get to the back of the line," is essentially what he was saying. So we incorporate all of that because those are basic human desires and needs. We recognize the Christ presence within each other. And we seek to express more of that consciousness in our daily lives. Charles Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, wrote this: "The indwelling Christ is the true light which lighteth every man that cometh into the world." Charles liked to wax Shakespearean every now and then. But that's true. The indwelling Christ is the light which lights everyone who comes into this world. We have that in us. And for those of you who may not know yet what when we say the Christ in Unity, we're not talking about the individual person, Jesus. He was a Christ. He modeled the Christ for us. He said, "You have this in you too. It's in all of us. It's like the spaghetti sauce. It's in there." Remember that? We have it within us. So this recognition of the Christ within us, the Christ-centeredness, forms the foundation of our spiritual practice. Because seeing the divine in one another allows us to live from a place of deeper compassion, deeper understanding, and deeper grace. But how often do we really think about what it means to be Christ-centered? As we learned last week, we cannot see that in others if we cannot first see it in ourselves. So let's ask ourselves, what does it mean to me to be Christ-centered? Well, as I said, the Christ for us is that light of divinity, that spark of divinity, that little bit of God that is us. It's in every one of us. But how do we bring that out? Is it always easy? Oh my gosh, no. And maybe that's where we need to get honest and authentic with ourselves. So perhaps we should look at what it is not first. What does it look like not being Christ-centered? And what does it mean to be Christ-centered? Well, as I said a minute ago, we have this idea that if we are Christ-centered, we're going to walk around like this. Everything is holy. Oh, look, unicorns, bunnies, rainbows. Oh, I see the Christ in you. Even though you're pushing every button my human ego mind has. I wasn't looking at anybody in specific, just so you know. That's not what the Christ spirit, Christ-centeredness is. We're human beings. That is a part of us. You know, we have this thing that we say, well, we're spiritual beings having a human experience, as if those are two different things. Maybe it's time to come into oneness within ourselves and recognize that we are spiritual and human at the same time. I have moments, believe it or not, when I am not Christ-centered. I'm going to, it's confession time, folks. Once in a while, I cuss. Ask Novella. I don't think I ever cuss at people. I cuss at situations and like when I'm trying to put some part in the car or something and it doesn't fit. I'm human. By the way, Jesus cussed too. There are references to that. He was human as well. He even said, I am the Son of Man, which was their way of saying, I'm like you. I'm a human being. I have this Christ within me, and I'm working to bring it out more and more. And certainly he was able to express that better than I can, at least at this point in my journey. But he was a human being. So part of being Christ-centered is recognizing that, yes, I am a spiritual being. Yes, I have all the attributes of the Christ within me, and I am at the same time human. I have an ego mind, thank God, because I couldn't be human if I didn't have that. And of course, we want to be in that consciousness of Christ-centeredness more than we are in the human part of us, but both are vitally important in this experience. So what next? How do we begin to really manifest and express more of that Christ-centeredness in our daily lives and experience? Well, the first thing we have to recognize and admit and accept is that there is never a time when we are not Christ-centered. Even when I'm cussing at the house, usually over technology, by the way. There's a reason they call that little thing your mouse puts up on the screen a cursor. There is a reason. But even in those moments, I'm centered in the Christ. I have forgotten it in those moments, though. And we all have that. There is never a time when you are not Christ-centered. There is never a time when somebody out there robbing a bank or doing something horrendous is not Christ-centered. But what happens is in our daily lives, in our daily experience, we get caught up in the outer and we forget. And thus we act more from the human consciousness rather than the Christ consciousness. Now the good news about that is we can remember our Christ-centeredness at any moment. And that's what we're really working on developing is our memory. When we have those times when we're frustrated working with our computers or whatever, or when the outer world is getting to us, we can stop and say, wait a minute. I center myself in the Christ center. I find myself in the light. I can remember that I am a Christ becoming. Charles Fillmore wrote in Adam Smashing Power of the Mind, he was talking about what happens when we find ourselves in the midst of challenge and what he called the places of darkness. He wrote, "Proclaim the presence and the power of the Christ." And that is our first mortal move in dissolving darkness. Our first mortal move in dissolving darkness. We want more light in the world. Guess what? It starts here. We have to take that first mortal step. What that means is we can change ourselves and thus the world by proclaiming the presence and power of the Christ consciousness. That's what Jesus was talking about when he said, "If I am lifted up, I draw all others unto me." Now, first of all, he didn't say unto, but second of all, he wasn't talking about him, the ego personality. He was not saying, put Jesus, me, the human, up on a pedestal and worship me. He was saying, when the I am, the truth of who we are, because that's the words that they used for the truth of who we are or the divine, I am, when that is lifted up in consciousness, it automatically affects everyone around us. When you have a rise in consciousness, I am lifted up. Anytime anybody does that, we affect the world around us and we lift it up just a little bit higher. Yeah, we may not know how to fix everything, but by being Christ-centered, we begin the process. And Christ's teachings of love and compassion resonate deeply within us. And that allows us to shape our worldview in a different way. That allows us to look for compassion and be compassionate. That allows us to recognize love as the cornerstone of our faith. The love that extends beyond sentimentality and actually is a transformative energy that heals, inspires, and unites. And that's what brings us to our next core value. The Christ-centered allows us to be loving and use that energy and express that energy in the world, which allows us to step into a consciousness of inclusivity. Unity has been about inclusivity for many, many, many decades. We practice it, and we practice it with the understanding that, as we say often in unity, God in unity, no one is left out. We're founded on the idea. It was just the idea that all spiritual paths lead to God, that there is wisdom that we can draw from every spiritual practice. That's why we have the symbols of the world's religions on our altar and on that flag right there. As Unity Minister Eric Butterworth wrote, "God is not a being with parts. God is a circle whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere." Probably one of the most powerful things he ever wrote about God. So inclusivity invites us to see this omnipresent divinity that is in every human being and welcoming the diversity as a reflection of God in each and every human being. It goes deeper, though. It embraces different ideas about life, about love, about relationships, and yes, even about politics and economics. It allows us to see that there is value in all paths. You know, we have this weird need as human beings to always be right. Or am I the only one? I happen to be right about that, you know. Honestly, if we're really honest, there's a part of us that is like, we want to be right all the time. And we want the world to be the way we want it to be. If only everybody would think like I do. If only everybody would think like Unity thinks. What a beautiful world it would be. If only we were all identical and the same. Only my ideas of love and relationship are the right ones. Only my ideas of economics and politics are the right one. Only my way of life is the right way of life. That's a very small box. And it doesn't allow for diversity. Diversity and new ideas and growth and evolution all require that we don't do everything the same. That we don't all look exactly the same, but that we recognize that there is a power and a greatness and unlimited opportunity in being diverse and inclusive. And so it stands as a pillar of our community, a testament to our belief in the inherent divinity, dignity, and worth of every human being. We embrace it in all its forms. We welcome individuals of varying backgrounds, beliefs, and life experiences. And in doing so, we honor the richness of the human experience. And we cultivate a space where all are valued and respected, and where we can learn from one another. You know how many teachers we have in this congregation? Very good. Who said that? Way to go, Janet. Yes. Yes. If you are a part of this in any way, shape, or form, you are one of the teachers. You know, I spent an evening meditating and chanting with Sikhs at our conference. And they call each other guru. And guru doesn't mean like you're up on a pedestal, you are the guru. Guru to them means everyone, because everyone is on the path. Everyone, whether they're consciously doing it or not, is learning and growing from each other. So we are all gurus to one another. That allows us to be joy-filled, which is our next core value, joyous. We really strive in unity to make sure that joy permeates our gatherings and our activities. We reflect a celebration of life and of faith that is rooted in the assurance that God's nature is goodness and love. Nothing else, nothing less. And so we find joy not only in the moments of triumph, but even in the times of challenge and growth. How many of you, when you are faced with a challenge, especially a serious challenge, feel joyful? Yeah, that's a tough one, isn't it? Well, let me give you some ideas that might help with that. First of all, understand something. If you're not having challenges, you're not growing. What's the point if you don't have challenges? So rejoice. Oh boy, yeah, I can see the joy there. Gordon has lost it. But seriously, how would you grow if you didn't have challenges? If we didn't have opportunities to sharpen our tools and our consciousness on the cutting edge of what we experience in life? Oh, I know we would all love a life without challenges on the human level, but I do believe it would be very dull and very pointless. Where we misunderstand joy is that we confuse joy with happiness. Happiness comes out of joy. Joy does not come out of happiness all the time, though, because happiness too often is based on outer circumstances, whereas joy is a state of being that transcends those outer circumstances. There can be times when I am not feeling happy, but down under that, I still am joyful. I am joyful because guess what? Here I am in the midst of this challenge. I'm in it. It didn't bowl me over. It didn't end me. It didn't, you know, it didn't defeat me. I'm here. I have no idea what to do. I'm really not liking this. But I am joyful. I may not be happy, but I am joyful. And so we can always be joyful. Mary Cupferly, a Unity minister years ago, wrote this: joy is a natural state of being. It is not dependent on what occurred 10 years ago, a month ago, yesterday, or even last night. Joy belongs to you whether you know it or not. Think about that. Joy belongs to you whether you know it or not. It is yours now to discover, to use, to exercise, and to bring into expression. May Roland added this to that, what she wrote. When we touch that inner spring of joy, we feel the strength of it, constantly sustaining us no matter what may be going on around us. That's joy, and that is different from happiness. One of the ways we really can tap into that, which this community is wonderful at, is through service. Scientists, sociologists, psychiatrists have all said that's one of the top ways to find joy is in serving others, because it gets us out of our head. It allows us to express our gifts, our love, our compassion. I got curious. which I often do with words, and I looked up the Sanskrit word that was the root of joy, and it was mudite, and it meant delighting in others' well-being. Delighting in others' well-being, that was the original meaning of the word. Charles Lely, another Unity author, wrote, "Perhaps life is not meant to be a continuous bowl of cherries, but rather an opportunity for developing our roots, our foundation, for higher responsibilities with their concomitant capacity for greater joy." You don't have to be able to say that real well. It is joy that transcends circumstance, lifting our spirits, nurturing our souls. And as we center our hearts in love, we discover joy. We discover a deep, abiding joy that transcends the fleeting moments of happiness. And so we emphasize in Unity, joy is a spiritual practice, a conscious decision to align ourselves with the divine flow. Myrtle Fillmore, a co-founder of Unity, wrote, "We can walk in the joy of knowing that God is in charge no matter what appearances may suggest." Ever look around and go, "I don't think God's in charge of this"? That principle that God is always behind anything. It's coming through our human filters. So it may not always look like it's God is there, but God is. Our job, and it's easy when we are in a place of joy, is to look in all of that mess and go, "Oh, there's God." It's like the two little boys who were twin brothers. One was very optimistic and one was very pessimistic. Some of you know this story. And their father decided one year for their birthday, he wanted to see how they would react if he tried an experiment to see how their optimism and pessimism was. So he gave his pessimistic son, he gave him all these beautiful presents and toys and everything. And, you know, the kid would unwrap one and go, "Oh, this will be broken in an hour." And, you know, just, you know how it is with that consciousness. The other son, he put a big pile of manure in the backyard. And he looked out, and the optimistic son's digging through the manure. And he goes, "What are you doing?" He says, "With all this manure, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere." God is in charge no matter what appearances may suggest. And that's not dependent on outer circumstances. It arises from our connection to spirit and our realization of the truth and the celebration of life itself. That's one thing I love about Unity. We don't just get through life. We celebrate it. The good times and, yes, even the challenging times, which allows us to be uplifted and to uplift our next core value. Don't you like the way I segue into it? Uplifting is a vital part of who we are, of what we do. We seek to uplift others. We also uplift ourselves, for we are all interconnected. We're all one. Again, going back to what Jesus said about lifting up. When we uplift ourselves, we lift up others. When others uplift themselves, we are uplifted. It aligns with the principle of divine supply and circulation, that what we give, we receive in return. We go out and give, "Oh, life is horrible. Why are you so happy?" That's what we're giving out. And guess what? That's what we'll get back in return. Ella Pomeroy, in her powerful work, The Power of the Soul, writes, "As we lift others up, we step into the flow of divine law, the law of circulation, where every act of love, every act of kindness, every act of service returns to us multiplied." It's not just about encouragement. It's about consciously choosing to see and call forth the highest in ourselves and in one another. It's a natural outgrowth of our commitment to spiritual growth. It allows us to be connected as a community, to be and form supportive relationships right here. We encourage one another to reach and aspire to our highest potential. Whether it be through prayer, study, acts of service, we empower each other to contribute, to receive, and to grow. Which allows us then to be open-minded. When we're in these consciousnesses, each one builds on the one before it. We can be open-minded. That's spiritual freedom. Open-mindedness characterizes our approach to life and to our faith. We recognize that spiritual truths are diverse and multifaceted, which invites exploration and dialogue. I love it when I hear different ideas from different spiritual paths and different experiences. In our pursuit of understanding, we can then remain receptive to new perspectives, new insights, which enriches us. We value open-mindedness, understanding that spiritual growth comes through freedom of thought. One of the things that we do not do is tell you what to think. We teach how to think. If you look on our website, it says, you go to that page that says About Us, we do not tell you what to think. We teach you how to think, which is really what Jesus was doing. If you get beyond all the dogma and misinterpretations and everything in the modern Bible and get really to the core of what he was saying, this is working for me. Try it. He didn't say, you have to do this. Think about the Ten Commandments. Those were thou shalt not. And Jesus came and said, no. Love God, love one another, love yourself. He gave a framework. He didn't tell people what to think. He taught them how to think. He encouraged exploration, questioning, and inquiry. Charles Fillmore emphasized this when he said, we must ever be on the alert for new truths, new ideas, new methods, and be willing to experiment with them. Charles experimented with all kinds of different things over his 94 years. Some he said, nah, that doesn't work for me, and he let it go. But he looked at it. He inquired. And as we expand our consciousness then, we continue to evolve on our spiritual path, and we realize life can be fun. Life can be fun. There is a divine playfulness in life, and fun is important. In 2 weeks, we're actually going to have some fun next week too. It's not going to be all sad, don't worry. And then the following week is the Sunday before Halloween, and we're going to do the metaphysics of Star Trek. And yes, you can come in your Star Trek costumes. I know some of you got them. I have one. So we can have fun. We encourage fun. We are created as joyous, playful beings, and reclaiming that enhances our spiritual and everyday lives. You know, often as adults, we lose touch with that. Life is serious. But in unity, we understand that life is meant to be lived with joy and delight. In the words of Martha Smock, life is for loving, living, and laughing, and expressing the divine joy that is within us. Fun is a divine gift, reminding us not to take life too seriously. Embrace the joy that comes from simply being. That fosters a sense of camaraderie between us. It builds our unity community. It allows us to be lighthearted. And through joy, we forge bonds of friendship and strengthen our sense of unity. It is in joy that we find moments of renewal and inspiration. And those moments fortify us for the challenges that do come to us every now and again. When we're living from that place of joy and we recognize life is fun, challenges take on a whole different meaning. Somebody not too long ago said when something happens that was not in their plans, they don't go, oh, no, I got to change my plans. They go, plot twist. It's a plot twist. And we get to run with it and have fun with it. So in conclusion, as we embody our values, being Christ-centered, inclusive, joyous, uplifting, open-minded, and fun, we claim our divine inheritance. As Charles Fillmore said, we are children of the Most High and should therefore claim our divine inheritance and practice it. Not enough to just claim it, practice it, live it. Our inheritance is an abundance of good. An abundance of spiritual gifts that's waiting to be realized within us and through us and as us. And it is only when we can discover these qualities within ourselves that we can inspire and empower others to find it within themselves. We become a beacon of light in the world, reflecting the truth of the Christ nature that is everybody's nature and the boundless potential of each and every human being. So relax, have fun, and be joyful. Namaste.
We hope you enjoyed today's message. If you would like to support this podcast, you may do so at uscabq.org.